And the previous program was the WBAI Evening News. And just as a note of correction, Paul DiRienzo, it is actually the shortest day of the year, not the longest day of the year. The longest day of the year is the summer solstice. This is the winter solstice. So just wanted to clarify that. Didn't want to call you out like that, but, you know, it needs to be cleared. It is now 6:30 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
This is Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. Extinction Rebellion is an international nonviolent movement that uses direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. This week, we're going to talk about activism in Italy, climate activism in Italy, and we're going to talk about pre-COP. Now, you've all heard of COP26, but before COP26, there was the pre-COP meeting that took place in Milan, Italy, and it was many of the delegates kind of laying the land and doing pre-negotiations. Well, Extinction Rebellion had a protest around this, very active, and we're going to talk with one of the people who was involved with organizing that protest. We have with us today Beatrice Costantino, an activist from Extinction Rebellion Italy who is joining us from Rome. Beatrice, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Matthew and Alice.
Okay, so let's start from the beginning. What was pre-COP and when did it happen?
You know that in these days we had a COP, COP in Glasgow, and the pre-COP had taken place in Milan. So it was just a way to precede the meetings that were nowadays. In Glasgow, and I don't know if you know it, but Italy was also the host of G20. Mm-hmm. So it was a choice to make pre-COP meetings also in Italy, in Milan.
And when did that take place?
Yeah, it was from the 3rd of September until the 2nd of October, so only 3 days, and that's when we did the actions. During the meetings.
September 30th to October 2nd. So what were these actions and why did you select those actions to do?
We had different kind of actions, so more theatrical and artistic actions, and then an affinity group, which I was part, chose to do some more disruptive actions. So essentially we blocked roads around the MICO, which is the center of the meetings. So it was like a way to disrupt the city, but also, of course, all the ministers and all the people who joined the meetings in the center. And so we did it for 3 days. So every day we came back and repeated the same actions or almost the same actions in order to be, taken to prison, essentially. And also get a lot of media attention.
So were those ministers in fact blocked from entering? You did in fact disrupt the meeting? Is that what took place?
Well, we tried. And then, of course, what we have learned this year in Italy is that when you have all these international meetings, you have a lot of police, of course. So if you try to block the roads in the nearby, it lasts like 20 minutes. And after that, you're just taken away. So it's not so, it's not so effective, even because after a few days, they know you and they know what you're going to do. So it's also really, really, really easy for them to prevent your actions. And it's also, I think it's a bit anxious also for people who join the action to come in the road when there are already policemen there.
Now, how did this get organized? How did it come together? I think a lot of people who haven't done much activism, it can seem kind of mysterious how a protest happens or even how a group comes to be at all, unless there's money and an organization paying for it. So I guess, and you know, I'm offering you two questions. How is Extinction Rebellion's Milan chapter organized, and how did the pre-COP actions get organized?
I think that this year in Italy, we had like a decentralized organizations. So a lot of local groups and affinity groups also came together to organize actions. So, so there was not a strategic group which thought all the actions during the year. So I think that, well, we had this calendar, of course, because we knew the G20 meetings before. And so the local group of Milan, of course, knew that the pre-COP was going to be there. So they made a lot of the job, I think, because they prepare for all the year, also with other movements to meet and come together during the pre-COP and also organizing a climate camp and whatever. And all the other affinity groups of XR Italy thought about something else. So I was part of one affinity group, which was going to do stronger actions. So we were, I guess, 9 or 10 people who joined together to think about it. And we thought about, yeah, this kind of actions. And then we called other people. So it was like a small group who started, and then the actions spread to other affinity groups and other people from Italy. And we also asked other people from Europe to join. So we had like 5 or 6 people from XR Europe, from different countries. So I guess it was like the first time that I helped organizing an action. And it was nice to start as a small group and then propose our choice, our actions to others, and see that it was something that they liked. We choose to do like really simple actions. So, you know, if you block roads, you don't need much, especially in Italy, because if you block a road with objects in Italy, well, you can go to prison for 2 to 12 years if you do it on group. So we choose to do it only with our bodies, which is just a fine. So it's not so heavy like legal consequences. So we just had banners and gilets to be so that people could see us. So not a lot of money spent. And I think it's also, well, a good key for success, not to have such money to spend and just go with your determination and with your desire to have legal consequences and to be taken to prison.
Your choice to block roads, what was behind that? What was your thinking in terms of blocking roads, in terms of what you hope to accomplish?
Well, it was like a way to have more disruptive actions. And we also like threw paint against the walls of the meeting center. So we did some different kind of actions, but only by blocking roads, we were able to be taken to prison. And it was a success for us because for 2 years that Extinction Rebellion was born in Italy, no one was never taken to prison. So the police refused every time to take us. So they just put us on the like on the back of the roads, or they try to rearrange the traffic roads according to your position. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we decided to not only to block roads, but to come back every time that they took us aside. I don't know if you can understand me.
No, I can totally understand you.
Yeah, and it was effective after a while. So it was a big success. And I know that people don't like blocking roads because we are afraid of people and of their hate. So of how the people can judge Extinction Rebellion. But the point is that it's always a mixture. So there are people who say, well, okay, it's not the good way to do it, but we are right. You are right. We agree with you for the reasons. So we don't agree with the methods, mm-hmm. but we can understand why. And I think it's the only way to get also the attention of media, of press, of newspapers.
Do you feel as if your action was successful?
Yeah, more than before, I think.
Mm-hmm. So how long did you spend in jail for your activism? And what was that experience like?
Okay, well, I was taken to prison twice. So the first and the second day. And yeah, every time like 3 or 4 hours. And well, the police was always really, really nice. Italian police is not always so nice, but for the moment, they were really kind to XR rebels. And the first day I was really, really, really fine. I was alone in the cell, so it was everything quiet. Well, the second day we were three girls of XR, but we were in a cell with a girl which was a bit violent. So it was not nice at all because we stayed there for 3 hours. And yeah, it was like an exercise to stay quiet while this girl was a bit crying or shouting or moving against us.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York City. We're speaking with Beatrice Costantino, an activist from Extinction Rebellion Italy, who is joining us from Rome.
Beatrice, you said it was a theatrical action. Could you explain that a little bit and paint us a picture of which elements of the action were theatrical? What all did you do?
Well, there were Red Rebels, and then I don't know how to say in English, but we made like the one big bird that puts his head under the sand, okay?
Oh, yeah.
How do you say that?
Wait, is that an ostrich, the bird that sticks its head?
Yeah. So it was like a symbol of all the politicians that ignore or pretend to ignore the climate crisis.
Could you tell us about the Last Generation campaign? I think this is an upcoming program. Now, don't say, this is going to get broadcast, so don't say anything that you don't want the police to hear. But as much as you're willing to make it public, tell us about this Last Generation campaign that you're planning.
Yeah, I'm part of this campaign. I'm organizing this campaign, and it's called Last Generation. It's a campaign inside the XR movement. And essentially, it's going to ask the third request of Extinction Rebellion, so citizens' assemblies. And we are going to do disruptive actions for 1 year, from the beginning of December of this year until 2022. And the objective is to have national assemblies by the end of 2022. And what we are going to do for the moment is, yeah, blocking roads in Rome or in the nearby, and to repeat it, I think, well, almost for 1 month, then to come back after a while and to repeat it for 1 year. And we are trying to gain numbers, so to mobilitate people while we are doing the actions. So I think it's a different way of organizing compared to the classical way of XR for the moment.
And a quick follow-up. What is the significance of the term last generation?
Last generation, it's a name that a lot of movements inside or outside Extinction Rebellion around the world has chosen. And so I think it's effective to recall the urgency to act and to say, okay, it's just us who can do that. It's not for other people in the future. And I think that for Italy, it's also nice to choose an Italian name, because every time that we say we are part of Extinction Rebellion, people don't understand what it is and what it means. So I think it's good and it's also more inclusive to choose an Italian name.
So what's your reaction to the politics of COP26?
Well, no wonder that I'm so disappointed, but I don't think that I expected something more. So I think it's just a way to confirm us that normal politics doesn't work and it's going to take us to death. But I don't know, maybe for some reasons, I'm also... Well, not happy, but I know that this big failure of COP26 can be a reason for movements to be stronger and to start again, mm-hmm. because it's so bad that people had to react. And maybe a partial win could be maybe worse because then people don't move. So we will see what's going to happen this year.
You know, the interesting thing is that I think most activists were clear that COP26 wasn't about anything. It was just a bunch of, you know, lies and pretend and so forth. And so it begs the question of why the protest took place there anyway. If we understood it to be a waste of time, then what is it that we wanted to accomplish by being there?
Well, I guess that... activists and movements didn't want to miss the meeting because it was so important. But at the same time, I don't know if protests can be effective during the meetings because everything is already decided. So you're just protesting like people who already know that it's going to be a failure. So the idea of Extinction Rebellion was to start with, you know, the rebellion weeks, because you know that you are the center of the attention, that you are taking your demands to the government, and that, yeah, people also have the strength to continue because they don't feel so weak and so useless like during G20 and COP and whatever. And if you speak to your government, you can also change its agenda. And if you participate to an international meeting where it's not much that you can do.
So we like to do an occasional segment on how the climate crisis is affecting different parts of the world. Of course, Americans know Italy and where it is. They know that there's a very, very long coastline. Most of them know that Venice is a very watery city. Anyway, tell us what is going on already and what is expected to happen in the future as the climate crisis hits Italy.
Italy, as all the Mediterranean area, is called a hotspot for climate. So already now the temperature has risen up twice the global average. So we are already in a desperate situation. Also for the ecological crisis, because, you know, the Mediterranean Sea, for example, is now full of exotic fish and also all the fishery in the past, has killed a lot of population. So the situation is really desperate. And, of course, the situation is going to worse. So a lot of Italian cities are going to be covered by sea because, of course, we have a lot of cities in the coast. And then all the center and especially the south of Italy are going to be partly covered by sea and partly going to be a desert because the temperatures are going to rise up really, really a lot. And the rain is already so less compared to the past. It's not the quantity that is less, but the point is that there are fewer days of rain during the year, and when it rains, it's a disaster, of course. And for the north of Italy, well, cities, big cities like Milan, like Turin, like Bologna also are going to have really heat waves, so that people are not going to be able to live there, especially in summer. And all the north and the Alps are going to have also problems of heat, because we have glaciers, so snow, and it's going to melt, be melt, I think, for the 80 or 90% by the end of the century. And if you think that we only have one river in Italy, and that river comes from the Alps, then it's going to be a disaster. And then, of course, we are at the center of that hotspot, the Mediterranean. So we already have a lot. Well, we have people who escape from Africa and who come here. So I think that the situation is going to worse by the end of the century, or in 10, 20 years.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. This week we have with us Beatrice Costantino from Rome in Italy, talking about the pre-COP actions that were taking place in Milan at the end of September, the beginning of October, and talking about how climate change is affecting Italy.
You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, I was going to ask you a question about migration in Africa, but what you've just laid out is a situation in which Italians may find themselves migrating, because, and I'm thinking about, you know, Venice, for example. So first of all, is that internal migration starting to happen, or are you all having conversations about migration in terms of your own survival? And then, of course, that being the other layer of that is brothers and sisters from Africa having to migrate because of ways in which climate change is affecting their lives as well. Of course, there's other reasons for migration from Africa, but certainly climate change is one of them.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that Italian people are so conscious to start thinking about their future and how they can migrate. Well, I think I am one of the examples, because I have moved to the mountains because I want to start a project of agriculture, ecological agriculture. And of course, because I'm afraid to live in a city which can have 45 degrees in summer as average media, as average temperature. And I think that in the future, well, we will have an internal migration again, especially from the south to the north. So it's going to be a mess, a chaos completely. And of course, we are going to have people from Africa, or maybe from Albania again, and other countries in the Mediterranean area. And I think that people are going to try to escape to the north of Europe. But I don't think that we are going to be able to migrate so much, because already nowadays, with all the problems of migration in Italy, all the roads that take to France, for example, or to Austria also, are already really checked by the police, so that nobody can pass unless they have all their ID and passports that work. And so I don't know if you know it, but for example, I'm from Piemonte. And so right there in the Alps, there are a lot of African people and people who try to escape France. They try to cross the Alps, and of course they are not able to do it, especially in winter, and they die from cold or from a lot of problems. And if most of the time they succeed to arrive in France, and they are taken back to Italy. So it's a desperate situation, of course, for them. And I guess it's going to be the same for us. It's just a matter of time. But I'm really happy, because I think that since Milan, the situation in Italy has changed a bit. So people now want to do more disruptive actions and more civil disobedience also here.
Mayor Chiche, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, be well.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
For Building Bridges, I'm Mimi Rosenberg, saying WBAI needs you to step up to keep our press free, to allow its message to radiate out over our signal, and to keep that signal keeping on. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Donate to the Tower Fund at $17,000 per month. We're on a campaign to raise next year's tower rent in full, to pay the basics so we can prepare to build for the future. Pay those essential bills now so we can plan to create additional platforms to broadcast our truth-telling, our content, our messaging, by podcasting, video, digital forms of delivery. So let's pay that $17,000 a month tower rent, $250,000 for the next year, now, to give us a solid foundation, a free press to arm ourselves to beat back the fascist attack, to prepare for empowering ourselves with the knowledge we need to build a democratic society. So whether it's $5,000, $1,000, $500, $100. Dee, give us those dead prez. $5,000, $1,000, $500, $100, or 100 of you right now stepping up to the plate. 100 of you pledging $25 right now. Step up for a free press. Step up and donate to our signal, our tower fund. Donate by calling 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I'm Mimi Rosenberg. I'm Mimi Rosenberg for Building Bridges. Saying, stay strong, stay well, and do the same for our station. Keep it strong. Keep it well.
Greetings, and thank you so much for listening to WBAI Radio. This Thursday, December 23rd, please tune in for our Report to the Listener, WBAI's management, Bertol Reimers, our station manager, and Linda Perry, WBAI's program director, that's me, will deliver our Report to the Listener as 2021 draws to a close, and we welcome 2022. Tune in on Thursday, December 23rd from 3 to 5 p.m. And if you miss it, you can listen Friday morning, December 24th from 6 to 8 a.m. And you can always hear whatever we broadcast on WBAI.org. That's WBAI's Report to the Listener right here on WBAI New York. Hope you can join us.